the Fed about to change its tune?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. The Federal Reserve is holding a meeting today in Washington, and policymakers are likely to announce that interest rates will remain near zero. The Fed has been keeping borrowing costs at that level ever since the financial crisis in order to spur lending and spending. But as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, this meeting could be the beginning of the beginning of the beginning of the end of those record low rates.
If you believe surveys of economists who watch the Fed, central bankers may eventually abandon their economic steroid policy. The Fed has kept interest rates ultra low and telegraphed they'd continue to do so for the next year and a half. So why back off? Well, the U.S. economy is showing some signs of life, says Steve Barrow at Standard Bank in London.
Things have been a little better in the last couple of months. Growth in the fourth quarter of this year could be 3% or more.
The economic hopeful camp thinks at the next meeting in January, the Fed may signal publicly that interest rates will eventually come off the floor. But policymakers are split. Some still see weaknesses and think the Fed needs to buy large amounts of mortgage securities.
The aim of this type of quantitative easing is not just to have lower rates, but it's also to put some extra cash in the economy.
As always, there's juicy conjecture, but the Fed next month may take away some of the parlor game fun. It plans to be more transparent in its communications and its leanings. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Now to Russia, where Vladimir Putin has a new opponent for the March presidential elections. It's billionaire Mikhail Prokhorov, who happens to own the New Jersey Nets. Here to tell us more is Dmitry Babich, who writes for Russia Profile magazine. He's with us from Moscow. Good morning.
Good morning.
So who is this guy Prokhorov, and where did he get all his money?
Well, he is relatively young. He is not yet 50. And he got extremely rich during the 90s when he became the owners of Norilsk Nickel, the largest nickel-producing plant in Russia, located in northern Siberia.
Nickel-producing plant?
Yes.
And when a billionaire runs for office in this country, maybe Michael Bloomberg, who's the mayor of New York City, it seems like they run in part on their economic record, and sort of voters look at the person and say, oh, maybe, you know, they certainly know how to make money for themselves. Maybe they can help all of us out. Is that at play here with voters in Russia?
That's exactly what Prokhorov tried to use also. He said that he is campaigning for the middle class. He said that he would allow people to make as much money as they can. He promised a relaxation of labor rules so that people would be able to work longer hours if they want. In summer this year, he became the head of the Liberal Party called the Right Course. It's called the Party of the Millionaires.
So are the Putin people worried about him?
I'm not sure they are too worried, because actually if he runs and if Putin beats them all, then Putin can say that in fact he won over all the prevailing ideologies in Russia, because at the election he's going to face a communist, a nationalist, and now also a liberal billionaire.
Dmitry Babich is with Russia Profile magazine. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning, down across Asia and up right now across Europe, up about 0.3% in London and same in Frankfurt at the moment. Gold has fallen to a 7-week low as cautious investors opt for the safety of the U.S. dollar instead. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow fell 162 points, about 1.3%, to close at 12,021.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. And by Thomson Reuters and their expedition to break the Oberlin speed record to the South Pole. You can follow them in real time at ExpeditionToTheSouthPole.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Well, it's the holiday season, which for some Americans means it's bonus time. On Wall Street, bankers and traders are bracing for their bonuses. I say bracing because bonuses are likely to be smaller this year. But as our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore reports, it's all relative.
It's bonus season on Wall Street. To anyone who works in finance, this one bonus payment will be a momentous validation or dismissal of an entire year's work. Michael Driscoll now teaches at Adelphi University, but he used to be a trader at Bear Stearns.
You know, face it, nobody goes to work on Wall Street because they're trying to cure cancer or work for the greater good of the common man. You go to Wall Street because you want to make a lot of money.
While there's less money available this year, banks have struggled to be profitable. Alan Johnson heads a firm that advises Wall Street on how to pay its people. He predicts that bonuses will be down by one-third this year. That would still net the average senior investment banker around $900,000. But don't call it a bonus.
The average person doesn't realize how much the word bonus has caused more pain than just about any word I can think about. We think of bonus as being a tip, a gratuity, extra. And for many people on Wall Street, it's most of their pay.
Richard Lipstein at Boyden Executive Search explains.
Someone made $1 million. It's likely that that person made maybe $200,000 in a base and $800,000 in a bonus.
And that $800,000 bonus wouldn't come in hard cash. Around 50% to 80% comes in the form of a bank's stock, and a banker may not be able to sell it for 3 years. But money with strings attached is better than no money at all. Most banks are laying people off. Morale is low, Driscoll says.
It makes for kind of a pall over the entire street.
Lipstein says layoffs are a bigger worry than the size of bonus checks this year.
Good number of people I talk to are almost happy to have a job.
Which makes Wall Street more like the rest of America for once. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
And finally, with less than 2 weeks to go before Christmas, you might be interested in this new scientific research. Gift recipients, it turns out, are not interested in expensive gifts, and they might not even care if a gift took a lot of thought. Those two factors apparently bring more joy to the giver than the recipient. One of the researchers tells the New York Times to just listen to what people say they want. He also says, get this, regifting is okay. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
It turns out calories and fat content don't really determine what and how we eat. What does, you ask?
When it comes to the food scene, very often in America, the child is in charge, and that again means soft and sweet and gooey.
Ew. I'm Kai Rizdal. Why we eat the way we do. Freakonomics has the answers. It's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.